Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar. Go and tell that midnight rider. Tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
Wall of Minds, this is Terry Dodd, and I am trying to log in to the switchboard here at Blog Talk Radio so that I can get our guest on live and Mike. And in the meantime, I'm having trouble getting my browser to get me logged in. So we're having our typical BTR technical difficulties for just a few moments. So if you'll bear with me here, we will get this show on the road. If I can get my browser to please let me log in to the switchboard. So our guest tonight is Chris Harreld. I'm going to let him introduce himself here in a minute. Unless I can get Doug Millar on and get Red live, I might let Doug introduce Chris because he's a little bit more familiar with him than I am. And I am just trying my best to get logged in. So if you'll just bear with me a half a second. I can't not get either one of my browsers to get me in. One of my associates has sent me a message that says that Magic Jack doesn't work. The call-in number tonight for those who are wanting to ask questions or join the conversation is 347-828-9176. And the BTR's sign-in just will not let me in. If you're in and you're listening, you're ahead of the game because it seems like Blog Talk Radio is just not going to let me bring the switchboard up tonight. I'm going to keep trying here, so if you'll just be patient with me, I'll see what I can do. I'm having to multitask. That kind of seems to be something that a person has to be very proficient in. Multitasking is critical if you want to be a Blog Talk Radio host or someone that does these shows. Somebody saying can't call in, just get a recording. Well, maybe we're having some issues that are maybe outside of my control. I hope some people at least can hear us. Boy. You know, one of the problems that I've been having of late is I've been making it so that cookies are not that easy to come onto my browsers because I've had a lot of those tracking programs on here, and when you try to limit those things, they start restricting your access to sites. And this thing's telling me that the blogtalkradio.com is not responding. So if you've gotten into the show and are listening, boy, you're doing better than the rest of us are. Let's see if recovering the web page will do me any good at all. I believe the recording is on and working, so I'm going to stay the course here. And see if I can possibly get this thing fired up. Well, I'm still here. And I was going to have Chris Harreld open us in prayer tonight, and he agreed to do that graciously. And I'm just going to hang in here for a second and stay the course and see if I can get this switchboard up and running. I sure would like to find a good competitive alternative to Blog Talk Radio. It seems we have this kind of technical difficulty almost as often as not. And if you think it's frustrating for you as a listener, you should try sitting in my seat. It can be very frustrating at times, and it certainly disrupts the flow of things. You have everything planned out in your mind, ready to go, knowing exactly what you're going to say and what you're going to do. And then this system that's supposed to be nice and reliable turns out to be just the opposite. It seems like it's trying to load it up, but boy, it sure isn't bringing it up for me. It's transferring the data for me, but it just isn't getting it up. Seems like this show might need Viagra tonight. BTR should have taken the blue pill. Sorry about my crassness there, but it's just a function of frustration. I get flippant when I get frustrated, and Yahweh has been working on me on that. I have to turn control over to the Spirit and let him take care of my anxiety for me here. Wow. I am going to open another window. Wow. Well, I'm just going to shut down my browser and reopen it so that I can get a new window. I hope it saves all the work that I've got in process there. It did let me call in and access the show via Skype, so that's good news. At least the whole system doesn't appear to be down. There, I finally got my browser to shut down, and now we'll try to reopen her. And get a new window and maybe make sure that the problem is not on my end. I don't believe it is, because I tried both two different browsers in Internet Explorer as well as Firefox, and neither one of them were having any success getting into BTR, so I believe the problem is with Blog Talk Radio. And we'll see where we get here shortly. Well, if you're listening and you can hear my voice, I hope you hope you're not quite as frustrated with this as I am right at this moment. I've been able to access any other pages through my browser, so I don't believe it's my browser. I believe it's Blog Talk Radio, but I'm going to keep trying because we've got a great guest tonight. We've got some other folks that we're going to call in and join the conversation, and I certainly hope we can still pull this off and have a great show for you. Ah, here comes the browser, finally. BTR had me pretty well locked up. I play some music, but I have to be on the switchboard in order to do that even, so. Taking it a little bit of time to load. Of course, whenever you're wanting something to go quickly, it always seems like it's moving a lot slower. I remember the first time that I was ever on camera, I was doing a closing class, and we were filming everyone to do their closing presentations for real estate. And boy, did it seem like time was just flying. When that camera was moving, you could spend 10 seconds or 15 seconds of silence. Just felt like it was an eternity. And if you slow yourself down and you talk like this, you know, just a normal pace, everything seems to go much better. But boy, it was like I wanted to talk faster and faster so that I was afraid there'd be dead air or that it wouldn't be interesting enough. And that was quite an experience. I remember that. And I have some passion for people that with a little stage fright or don't know how to handle themselves in the camera or on the show. You have to just kind of settle yourself and lay back a little bit. And that even helped me right now, just in this moment of frustration and waiting and just to think about that. So I trust that our listeners are a patient bunch and forgiving as well. So we do appreciate those that are regular listeners here at Walls in Our Minds. And I have learned that they are a great and loyal group. And I just take this opportunity to express my appreciation to you for joining us and listening. I am having a lot of trouble getting this thing to do anything at all. So my browser is not responding very well. Whatever was happening with BTR a while ago seems to have done it a number on my browser. I certainly hope no one else is having this experience tonight, that that their computers are functioning extremely slow as a result of coming into BTR. I hope that's not a systemic problem. Well, I certainly hope we don't have to abandon ship here. I wish people could type in my, I can't even open a chat window. So there's no way to communicate to anybody in chat. So I'm putting out a note to some of my folks on that talk to me in Skype instant message, Skype IM. We have several groups that keep our chats on IM open all the time. So I just put out the word to them to see if any of them can hear me. Wow. I can't get Blog Talk Radio's site to even load up. It brought up my search engine on the other tab, so I know my browser is working okay. It's just that I can't seem to get the Blog Talk Radio website to even come up on my browser now. So we are having some fun. My blog nick is Tenacity, so if anybody sees Tenacity out there making comments, you'll know that it's me, but that nickname that I picked up actually in college has stuck with me for, you know, a good 40 plus years now. Yeah, I guess it's been right at 42 years, and since that nickname was given me, and that's because I'm not one to quit. I don't know when to quit sometimes. It's been a number of times in my life that I should have quit a lot quicker. and you probably heard the jokes about let go of the rope. Well, there's been a few times that I should have let go of the rope and paid the price for not doing that. But at the same time, there's been a lot of things and challenges that I've faced that my tenacity has allowed me to overcome and conquer. So this is just one more. And I'm not sure how to beat this one. I'm going to try again to open up Internet Explorer. See if this one will let me in. Well, it brought up the page. Let's see if it'll let me log in now. Well, I'm still here and I'm still fighting a battle. Well, some people are saying that they had trouble getting into the call-in number, and now they're able to get into that. So maybe things are coming back around, and we'll be able to get this done. It seems to be trying to let me finally log in. So if you're hearing me, hang in here. We just might get this thing up and running shortly. Okay, now let's see if it'll give me the switchboard. Something's attacking my Adobe program, too. It's not letting things work properly. Studio. Man, this thing is just not letting me move at normal speed at all. I am making progress, however, so we just might get there shortly. Now, if my guests haven't gone away, I could also dial them up through Skype if we can access them that way. Wow, BTR is just moving at a snail's pace. Snail's pace. We've got a lot of people that have called in or and are still on the board, so that's a good thing. And it does show that I've got a live mic, so everybody's been listening to my ridiculous, frustrating rant here. Let's see if we can get some people live.
Hey.
Hey. Is this Chris?
Finally, it is.
I've been having a few technical difficulties here, but I sure appreciate your patience. Have you been able to hear me?
Every frustrated word.
Well, I'll tell you, I've certainly got some relief right now. I can feel the chills going up my back from finally getting through. This has been quite an experience.
Well,
I'm going to see if I can get Doug Millar and Red Beckman live.
I'd suggest the techno-crazy terrorist at the NSA or cyber hacker terrorist are probably messing with you tonight through the DARPA aspects of the TBR.
Well, you know, I should have prayed before I started the show instead of waiting to start the show and pray. Chris, would you please do the honors? Because we're going to need this prayer for the rest of the show.
It sounds like it could be exigent circumstances.
Indeed, and I'm trying to get our chat open. So while you're praying for us, I'm going to continue working on a few things. So please open us in prayer.
Our kind and gracious, loving Heavenly Father, we come to thee at this time and thank you for the opportunity to come together and assemble to learn the truth, the facts, the law, and things that would be pleasing unto thee for us to know. We pray that thou would have consideration and send your blessings and angels of technocracy repair to aid and assist the host on this call from the vexations that have been set upon by government bad actors of this criminal cabalistic conspiracy. We ask a special blessing on all those who have attended to listen, that they may have ears to hear, eyes to see, open minds to accept and at least contemplate the truths that we manifest on this call, that they may be protected, watched over, their families kept free from harm and from malicious agents and actors acting outside scope, sphere, and colors of law, that they may be guided to the light if they're not already there and continue to walk in the light if they are, that all good and perfect thing comes from thee, and that all things we do, we must do in service to thee. We know that you have bonded your son to send his life's blood to preserve us unworthy here on this earth and to provide a path for us to seek repair for our errors and our ways that we have walked when we weren't in the light. We pray that thou would have your minions minister unto all these poor people who are being preyed upon by this demonic legal system. The assaults and attacks on our air, our food, our water, our health, our medicines, and the terrorism by these wicked people who are sitting in the seats of governance who have perverted their opportunities to assist us to serving their own selfish interests. And finally, we pray for thee to bless thyself, because we know your plate is very full of vexations and troubles and appellations for mediation and repair from all those who have been abused on this planet in these dark times. But this is the Great Awakening. The battle is at hand between the sons of dark and the sons of light, and we know the end of the story and that thy will prevail. These things we say, ask, and petition thee in the name of thy Son, Christ. Amen.
Well, thank you very much for that wonderful opening prayer, Chris. Doug, I believe you've got a live mic. Do you want to say hello and get a test going here?
Sure. I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you loud and clear, Doug. Would you please introduce our guest tonight and give him an opportunity to share a little bit about himself before we launch out into any topics?
Good idea, sure. Folks, Chris Cave is a man with many talents. I had the privilege of being a guest in his home for several days about a year ago when I was in Las Vegas. And he and his wife devote full time to trying to help people with legal problems, and they do it as a ministry. It's an amazing ministry, and they've helped people in different states. They've gone and visited with them and done so, and so it's just a privilege to have him on my show a few times, and now they do a simulcast with Walls in Our Mind, and so he has a bigger audience, and I can assure you, you're in for a real treat tonight. And so maybe, Chris, you want to just open up by sharing where you grew up and give people a little background on yourself?
Well, absolutely, Doug, and thank you for the gracious welcome. Many of us don't cognize that our Creator has a plan much greater than most of us comprehend. And I, too, was of that type of individual. I did not realize that I was being sculpted, guided, and molded to serve the Creator from the time I was a very young individual until I was called by the Creator to fulfill His purposes. That all the things that I was guided to that I thought were my ideas were His ideas of studying and learning about words, reading dictionaries and encyclopedias, that I learned early on that words have power. They are sounds, and sounds are energy and frequency, and they have effects on those they come in contact with. Whether it be a sound in the woods where there's no one around, some ask, do they hear a clap or a cry in the woods? Perhaps spirit people do not. That the plants and the living things and the animals in the forest do hear, and they hear very well. And they can tell if that noise is a good noise or a bad noise, if it's evil or good, of light, whether it be fearful or accommodating. And through this path of studying words and their emanations, where they come from, the etymology of words, the science of the development of the word terms that we use, I did not realize, but I became blessed with a gift from the Creator of being able to have the scales removed from my eyes and the critical vision and examination of these words to discover many of the secrets and perhaps treachery that are hidden within the word terms that we use day in and day out in common speak without having a true grasp of what type of meanings or hidden incantations or spirit communications, evil or good or whatever else could possibly be in there. And it's so very, very curious that it's become very exciting to me to have been blessed with this gift, although some might not perceive this so. Learning the truth can be quite shocking if one is not prepared, because the truth is not always as we perceive it to be or believe it to be. In fact, the word believe has a lie right in the middle of it. Most people don't observe. But when our beliefs are founded on what someone else tells us, they may not be true. And so unless we do our own due diligent research, study, and discovery what the actual truth and facts are, if they're ascertainable, if we follow what somebody else is telling us the truth is, we may be deceived. And mark my words, the great deceiver is no mere amateur at his craft. He is a highly skilled perpetrator of deception, lies, the father of lies, in fact. And his minions have studied his ways. They're taught these lies that are termed to be the law of rhetoric. They claim it comes from Jean-Paul Sartre. But he's also obviously the seed of Satan, because he claims that in order to speak the truth, one must lie, or one must lie in order to speak the truth. Most of their word tricks and treachery can be twisted around, respelled, added to, taken from, secrets implied, inferred to those that are enlightened, prefixed, suffixed, put into different forms and versions, change the spelling, and use the sounds that you articulate by the assimilation of the word letter characters that are used to form the word, the vowels and the consonants that are arranged in a special fashion to elicit or seduce a particular sound which has frequencies and energy that can be used for positivity or negativity. I am a politically assassinated union electrician for being a whistleblower, but I'm without the ability to seek relief right now because we have a terrorist acting as the attorney general, which is really a shyster lawyer for the thief in chief, the imposter sitting in the White House, and his revolutionary terrorists that are occupying militantistically or militaristically, one would, but it's not a true military because it has a very psychopathic dimension to it, and they're destroying this country, our financial systems, although they're predicated on lies too and hypothecations. They're backed by nothing but the dwindling faith of America and other nations of the world. The only truth is in His word and His law on His land, the natural common law of nature's God on nature's lands. The preposterous concepts that the government owns land are illusions and delusions. These people who deem themselves to be man-gods know not of what they speak nor where these lands come from, because they may have assumed power and authority over it, but they did not create, and the created can never be greater than the creator. So I have set to following the counsel of the creator, and although I learned much about law and my law enforcement employment statuses with the first with Wackenhut Security Services as a shopper, detecting internal and external thefts, then with the Lawton, Oklahoma Police Department, then with the 546 Military Police attached to Criminal Investigation Division in Fort Sill, which is where Lawton is. I left there and went to work for the Lawton, Oklahoma Police Department for a couple of years. And then I followed Horace Greeley's counsel and went west, young man, and followed my ex-wife out here with my children to find them again, and wound up getting on the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department for a time. I found them to be going down a very dangerous path that I knew and cognized would be very dangerous for many of the officers, because they were being taught lies and not being taught the truth. And I knew that the lies they were being taught would lead to some of the officers doing time in jail. And indeed, my vision and assessment of the situation and perhaps spirit guidance from the Creator above has unfortunately proved true, absolutely and irrefutably. Many law enforcement officers and politicos in this state have gone to jail or turned up dead. This diabolical legal system that we deal with day in and day out, it turned me away from law enforcement because I saw how corrupt and deviant, diabolically evil it was becoming. We thought and used to teach that we were supposed to protect and serve. This was printed on the side of the 714 car from Dragnet series with the actors there. Of course, then there was the Chips and Highway Patrol and many, many different law enforcement series and Perry Mason. When there used to be some credibility, some honesty, some moral scruples, and actual goodwill in the carrying out of the duties of a public servant, as opposed to being a private, for private profits corporate mercenary masquerading as public servants as we see today. So I set about to study and learn the law. I was attacked by the mercenaries of the corporatocracy in Arizona when I sought to exercise my private rights to enjoy my Creator's provided rights to engage in the fruits of my own labors and develop my own home on private property in the middle of nowhere in a fairly natural, pristine, unmolested environment, and was set upon by malicious agents and actors of the corporate state under their schemes to generate revenue by deeming me to be a public nuisance, a criminal, willing to assess me $10,000 and $1,000 a day penalty and fine for being such a terrorist to them, for daring to exercise my private rights to enjoy the fruits of my labor and by my own creator-provided wit to construct and build my own home in the middle of nowhere. Well, with the Creator's help, he guided me to apply myself and diligently study the law, and many times assisted me by providing me the precise phraseology, citation, and sections of law that I needed to prepare my defense to defend myself, employing the law, as we're all diligently instructed to do, to not merely know the law, but to be articulate and able to exercise the law competently to defend ourselves as we are counseled. My people are destroyed for a lack of knowledge. Hosea 4:6. But if that knowledge is true, not true knowledge, then it's not worth the paper it's written on or worth the effort you spent to get it. You must search for the truth. And in order to know if it's the truth, you must seek the reproving of the Creator through prayerful supplication to determine if what you're studying and what you've learned is actually of him or of other sources. So, Doug and Todd, that's pretty much my story of how I got here. I will tell you that I did prevail. I prevailed in these circuit courts of appeal in the federal circuit courts in Yavapai County to a 3-judge panel under treaty law, constitutional diversity of citizenship, and private grants of land made patent, and achieved a sealed case that I was never advised of the outcome of. It was placed under seal to keep it secret because it had too much law, fact, and evidence I didn't want the people to know, because they like to hide the truth and obstruct justice and deny due process and violate the only laws that they set up that were supposed to be the law of the land, but it's now been replaced with these foreign Talmudic or Pharisaic laws of the ancient Sumer and Babel, the master-slave training laws they had that they kept control of their herds of human resources. The etymology of the word human means either monster or beast. It could also be cattle, chattel, or goyim, they call it. Beast of burden to be used for whatever purposes the masters of self-deemed masters of the universe seek to enjoy the enrichment of their own wealth at the sweat and fruits of labor of the people who they try to enslave and ensnare in their traps of corporatocracy and legal schemes that they deem to be law, but it's actually mere fictions of law, posed to have the appearance and the effect, but have not the lawful nature nor authority of law. And if you do not know the difference, then you stand the risk of suffering the penalties that are applied by their legal schemes and fictions. In fact, the positive law is what we all have been deceived to believe that we live under, where we're presumed to be innocent until proven guilty of some act that caused harm to another individual or their property, and to be able to articulate how that person caused that harm to that other person or property, to have a case to bring before the law, to have a matter before the court. But in these new foreign Talmudic Pharisaic legal schemes, these demonic man-god courts, where mere men put on black robes and try to act as if they had the powers of a God-man to limit your rights, to summon witnesses, to have evidence introduced into the court, to have an accurate record produced to the court, to be able to testify and to call witnesses to testify in your defense, and to judicially, and the word judicially is very interesting because it may also be Judas, J-U-D-A-S, small s, capital H-A, Shah, like in HaShatan, and Ali. So, or L would be a some form of a otherworldly god. So judicial, L, and judicial are an assimilated form of syllabic letter combinations that have you say one word that really has a secret encrypted legal meaning attached to it. Only those that are knowledgeable, studied, or gifted by having the scales of blindness removed from their eyes to give them the eyes to see with critical vision, to see what's hidden within that's placed before their eyes. So this is the place that I am in life now, and I found this diabolically horrific and abomination scheme within these legal mercenaries who pretend to be lawyers or counsel, but they're actually foreign mercenaries who have assimilated themselves as a militant, militaristic force in these criminal Kabbalistic cabal. Cabal means an assembly of the worshippers of Baal, who was the son of Moloch, who they sacrificed the infants to the fires of Moloch and their demonic schemes. It's these black-robed demons set up there, and you try to introduce evidence to defend yourself, and that's not acceptable. Now, that's stricken from the record. You try to call a witness. Oh, you didn't get those witnesses cleared. Or they won't let the witness testify because they're fearful that the witness is too knowledgeable and will bring too much criminality and exposure of what they're doing in the courts, and so they obstruct them from testifying. There are so many diabolic schemes that they do in there. I listened this morning when I was in a courtroom, and they were accusing the individuals of not making any effort in intentionally failing or willfully not paying fines that they had been assessed. However, unfortunately, the poor victims that were drugged before these diabolically demonic courts were not aware that they may have a disability from paying, and they can't convict for a disability, and the disabilities can't even be inquired on in under the protections provided for under the Accommodations Clause of the American Disabilities Act if one was competent to exercise it. It has some very useful legal positions that can protect you. In fact, while I was in the court, they had demanded that we lock away our electronic devices in a secured locker before we entered into beyond the magnetic detector you walked through. And to keep you from having any recording devices in the court so you can keep an accurate accounting of what actually occurred. So the secretary, the keeper of the judge's secret, can't, or the clerk of the court who protects the court for the judge and manages it, can't tamper with evidence and perjure themselves and change your testimony to make you feel appear like a fool by putting nonsensical words in place of the actual words you spoke, which might have been very lawfully correct and accurate, but to protect themselves, they'll try to re-spell your words to turn them against you to obtain legal advantage to destroy you by any means possible. Every one of those actors inside that stage that's called a court, a satanic court, where you have to pray to it. I think one of the commandments says, thou shalt have no other false gods before me. When you're praying to a court, you're worshiping a false god. You might petition for redress of grievances properly, as provided for within the constitutional First Amendment. You might possibly seek relief or amelioration to damages. But to pray to one of these black robe demons, I don't think the Creator would be pleased to find you doing so. But these are diabolical individuals you deal with. In fact, they're all officers of the corrupt court. Like I say, they're a militant cult that is posed to destroy you by any means possible. You can find that in Corpus Juris Secundum, Volume 7, under Attorneys were officers of the court. In fact, the name of that Article 7, Volume 7, is Attorney-Client Relationships. And when you look under officers of the court, you'll find all officers of the court are oath, one, to the bar, two, as officers of the court. In fact, some Black's Law say officers of the corrupt court, and three, not to the mere money-paying clients. Further, in that, under attorney fees, in that same Volume 7, which has a very important esoteric meaning in these ancient Middle Eastern legions of men, where the black robe priest cults practice, 7 is a very holy number. So that was what drew that to me in this federal court library, where there were probably 4 or 5 rows of brand new Corpus Juris Secundum, and I was guided to number 7, and it said attorney-client, and I knew that was the book I was supposed to look at after all those. I also found in that same book, under attorney fees, that the fees that you would tender to an attorney and voluntarily pay as a retainer, deposit on contract, or some other form of financial arrangement are deemed by these demons to be a mere gift, a contribution, or a donation, and thereby there is no obligation to expectation of performance to anything unless you create a private contract between you and that attorney. In fact, the word attorney, do I hear someone painfully, woefully taking exception with me? Questions at this time? Okay. So if you are...
I believe that was Doug trying to cough his head off.
Oh, well, perhaps. I thought maybe he was objecting to my statement.
No, well, no, I muted him until he can get himself back together here. So, Doug, if you want to lie, hit a 1, we'll get you back in.
That's quite all right.
Go right ahead.
Well, so anyway, if you are unwise enough to trust a banker or a liar lawyer or attorney, in fact, the word attorney I was about ready to tell you, comes from ancient Sanskrit, which is the oldest known language that's written on the face of the earth. In their language, ah either means a demon pagan god or two, and torn means to turn about or change or twist into something other than what it originally was. In fact, in their legal books, if you study in Black's Law and look up the word codify, the first definition is to bring into harmony, accord, or agreement with existing law. But there are several other definitions below there that get more diabolically corrupt, incorporating, obliterating, and replacing with a new form of law or no law at all. Abod or chaos out of order, is precisely where we are today. And, of course, they prominently displayed it on these useless usury debt notes and monums, money systems that we have in lieu of lawful monum, or monum, which is gold or silver, lawful coin of the realm, which is actual substance-backed money instead of mere fictitious debt notes without a promise. They are termed to be promises to pay, but they have no date of payment when they become due for payment. So therefore, they're mere usury debt instruments to further enslave us to foreign banking masters of the global central bank scams. Further, I will note with everyone on this call, I was shocked that I was guided, and I've been guided to study many dark things, dark writings of many of the cult masters that have written before, that are revered amongst the dark side, and the Creator has given me a special gift to enable me to read these demonic writings that I always petition him to give me his watchful and protecting guidance as I study these things so that I'm not affected by them in a negative way, but to allow me to understand what they're doing and saying so that I can share with others the truth that these diabolic demons and their minions are up to, so I can awaken, share, and share the truth about what they're really up to with the people who have ears to hear and eyes to see and open minds to at least entertain and to verify what I tell you is the truth on their own. Don't take me at my word, but search out and see when I tell you these things. If you don't expect I'm telling you truth, prove me wrong. Go to the books I tell you, the places I tell you, look up the things I tell you. And if they aren't there, I will gladly recant and rescind what I said and apologize to you for telling you something that was untruth. But the truth has no agenda. It stands on its own as irrefuted through time and eternity by facts, law, and evidence that will set aside anything that is not truthful that will not stand against it. So also in this same volume 7, I was intrigued in the miscellaneous section when I observed miscellaneous attorney-client sexual relations. So I looked to see what it said. And it said that it is not against the ethics of the attorney to have sexual relations with his client. After all, that's their stock and trade day in and day out. That's what they do to all of us, is they sexually violate us in their mind. There is a word that they like to use for it, but I won't use that word in respect for the people on this. But they effectually have intercourse with us through legal trickery and treason and twistings of words and word tricks and schemes and legal schemes and devices that are designed to destroy you, to steal your wealth, to lock you up and incarcerate you in their prize zones or prisons for all sorts of things that are not breakings of laws, that are not felony offenses, that do not violate the Creator's laws, the Ten Commandments, or any of his other laws, because there were a lot more than 10 when he originally wrote them, as I recall finding when I studied, but 10's a tough enough number for most mortals to deal with. So if they follow those 10, how would they follow any others? But the first and the second are very close to one another. And it's just so diabolically insane that people would get so far away from his teachings, because we know we can either serve the Creator and his law, or we can serve man's law. In fact, I think Gaia said we can either serve the Creator or venial judges. I think venial means blood-sucking, and I'm pretty sure that's what it means, and they certainly seem to fit the bill. And so I'm sure in his aged wise counsel, many hundreds if not thousands of years ago, when he made that observation, he knew precisely what types of individuals we're dealing with today in these courts, these purported halls of justice or justice. So these are very, very dark times. This is the time of the Great Awakening. Otherwise, I wouldn't be here telling you these things now. You wouldn't be here listening to me. People are waking up all over the world. They're understanding that these bank gods and their treachery of lending schemes where they use your biometric testamentary evidence, your autograph. We don't like to use a signature or a sign because it puts an evil spell on us when we sign our name away. So we might put an autograph or script testimony to what we're agreeing to, but you better read the fine print and look at both sides of that piece of paper, because there might be onerous or secret non-disclosed terms on the backside. If you don't flip it over and look, you'd be owned by the terms of the contract. That's what the term onerous means, having onerous conditions. and effects by the language or tacit presumptions or insinuations that are incorporated in the word terms inside the contract. In fact,
hey,
I am pretty
Chris?
Sure. Yes.
Let me introduce you to somebody that you might like to get acquainted with. Red, unmute yourself if you are muted. We've given you a live mic, Red. But we hear you loud and clear.
Is this the famous Red Beckman?
Yes.
Wow.
Can you hear me?
I am blessed, honored, and immensely pleased to have your presence on the same call with this mere meted, learned man of the law and servant to the Creator. Thank you so much, Red, for coming along.
You can hear me, Dan, at this point?
Yes, absolutely.
Very good, very good. On this phone, I can mute it, but I can't, there's no light or anything, nothing there to tell me whether I'm muted or not. So anyway, I'm glad to be here, and of course, it's always so encouraging when we cross trails with other people of like mind, and I'm excited about the day in which we're living because I tell people that we're seeing an explosion of truth. And we've got truth bombs being dropped on us from all directions every day here, it seems. And I keep being reminded of what the prophet Daniel told us in Daniel, the 12th chapter and the 4th verse. He said, in the last days, knowledge would increase. And, he could have said truth would increase. Knowledge has to consist of truth. You can believe all the lies and get a PhD for believing a lot of lies, but you don't have any knowledge. And so, because knowledge has to consist of truth. And we have been fed such a diet of false information, the lies. Satan is the father of lies. And we've been just inundated in such a flood of lies for so long. And, of course, the courts have been part of the problem, a major part of the problem. But I think we are learning how to shut those courts down as far as they're trying to be gods, small g gods. And I'm sure that there are judges out there. I don't know. I think Terry, he is aware of this comment that was made by a federal judge down in North Carolina. And our guest here, I hope he's heard this too. But I think that we are going to hear a lot of this kind of thing. Of course, you all know that I'm the co-author of the book, The Law That Never Was, and of course, I started that process in June of 1980. And so I'm very, very much a part of the debate on whether the 16th Amendment was ratified or not, and of course, there's no debate as far as I'm concerned. But here's what a federal judge, a federal district judge, James Fox, down in northern North Carolina, made this comment. And I have the copy of the transcript from that case, and it was not an income tax case. What he was doing was trying to demonstrate the fact that federal judges think they have all of this power. And he was talking to the plaintiff in this action that they were dismissing at that point. And he said, there are cases, now I'm quoting the federal judge, He says there are cases where a long course of history, in fact, does change the Constitution. Now, what a statement. You know, this is a statement where he is exposing the entire U.S. judiciary because they have been confronted with the facts of the fraudulent ratification of the 16th Amendment. They've been confronted with this ever since the fall of 1980. And that's 33 years ago. And, you know, this guy, he it's on the record. And so this is one of the truth bombs that that have come our way, and there's going to be a lot more of them. And, of course, I've had so many good things happen because I have cited the judges in the courts, especially on tax controversies, but it isn't just on tax controversies, but any controversy, even if it's, you know, a First Amendment, the freedom to speak or the freedom to press, they have played games with us. They have lorded us over us because of the power that we have been able, or they have been able to assume without any objection from we the people. And now the objections are adding up. And, of course, these judges are, they're being confronted with the truth. And the perfect antidote for a lie is the truth. And so it's a great day to be alive. I'm just thrilled to death because I'm hearing of all these different people around the United States that are jumping on this thing. And as I was telling Terry earlier, before the program this evening, I had a conversation with a lawyer in Great Falls, Montana today. And I'm out here in Washington State right now, but I'm the official in charge of the process of settling a brother's estate who has passed away. And I give this lawyer just a little bit of information about what I was going to do settling this estate. And that lawyer, I had to almost feel sorry for him because he had been so shortchanged in his education, law school education. They hadn't taught him anything about the Seventh Amendment, nothing. And that's by far the most powerful of all the Ten Amendments of the Bill of Rights. And he hadn't learned anything. He hadn't been taught anything until I explained some things to him today. And it was so interesting because there was no argument, because he recognized that I was telling him the truth. He looked it up right away when I mentioned the seventh article of the Bill of Rights. I told him, look it up. See what it says.
It's interesting. It's interesting, Red.
Yeah.
Red, it's interesting, too, to I've been doing some research on trusts, and one of the things that I've quickly discovered is that attorneys have very limited knowledge on trust, at least most of them do. There's a few out there that have a pretty good understanding of it, but the vast majority of them do not, and the difference is that they teach living trusts in law school, but they haven't been teaching contract trust. And the contract trust are the ones that the, you know, the cobble knows I mean, they, if you look at the Kennedys and the Rockefellers and those guys, they've all been using contract trust. But if you call up an attorney, most of them, and tell them you want to, you know, create a trust and ask them about it, they're not going to talk to you generally about a contract trust, because that's the kind of trust that goes from generation to generation without the government being able to stick its hand
right
in there and abscond with your inheritance taxes and things. So it's very interesting that not only the Seventh Amendment is not taught in the law schools, but the concept of contract trust is not taught there either.
This is the way it is all the way across the board, almost on everything, where we end up in some kind of a legal argument with the government in particular. It's almost hilarious sometimes when you confront these people with the truth. And they recognize it when they hear the truth. It may be a lie that they have believed and accepted as truth. But when you come along and you bounce this off them about what is true, like I said, truth is the perfect antidote for lie. And,
you know, Red,
yeah,
you know, those poor attorneys are going to have a great case for theft by deception and breach of contract, because those schools obtain money without providing any actual education, truth, facts, or law. They tell them statutes, codes, regulations, and policies. Those don't have anything to do with the truth. And so these lies that they've been seduced with, that they're perpetrating against everybody, when they're confronted with the truth, facts, law, and evidence, as you do, I try, and sounds like Todd does, and probably many on this call, it becomes a shock to their system, because when the truth is irrefutable, it stands alone as unassailable.
Yeah, it's really amazing, and of course, what amazes me, because I've been at this for a long, long time, and it wasn't until I had been involved for 20 years that it just dawned on me that all your judges on the federal level, in particular, having to do with income tax cases, they have been making findings of fact and conclusions of law, and they don't have that authority because of that very serious conflict of interest that they have, because they are beneficiaries of the tax laws. And boy, I'll tell you, why in the world did it take me 20 years to figure that out?
Challenge them and object and ask what facts, law, and evidence support their interesting Nobel legal theories?
Well, you know, I've done it, and of course, you see, we really didn't have, in the freedom movement, we really didn't have the kind of resources that are available today with computers and the easy access to a lot of things. But you see, I sued a federal judge in 1993. That's 20 years ago. I sued the federal judge, and I had some actions that I had filed and demanded a jury trial, and the Justice Department would put in a motion for summary judgment because they said I had failed to state a claim upon which relief could be granted,
B6.
One of their favorite little deals.
B6.
Anyway, I sued this federal judge, and I used the seventh article of the Bill of Rights, and the case went up, and it went to the U.S. Supreme Court, and it was docketed the first week of August of 1996, and that was in August, and then in December of 1996, the Solicitor General, who represents the government, defends the government in all cases before the U.S. Supreme Court, where the government is a party. And he noticed all the parties to the action that he was not going to oppose me. I was correct in what I was saying, and it took him 4 months after the case was docketed. And here he is. He's the one that is responsible for defending the federal government in this action. But 4 months after the case was docketed, then he responds and says that I'm correct, and therefore he is not going to oppose me. Well, that is the power of truth. And so, you see, that's 20 years ago when I used that, and of course I wrote about the conflicts of interest in my little book, Walls in Our Minds. I wrote that in 1989. And so I was catching on, but it's kind of a slow process, but now it's exploding, and people are just picking up on it, and it's just you just have to wonder what next is our Creator going to reveal to us. What's the next step in this thing? Because he is very much a party to the action here. And I like I said, I referred to that prophecy from Daniel. You know, that's thousands of years ago when Daniel wrote that. And he said, in the last days, knowledge shall increase. And we're part of it. It is happening in our day. And I just, I'm thrilled to death by it. Terry, I'm going to leave a little early, so don't be surprised if you miss me after a bit.
That's all right, Red. Understand, I know you had a full day, and we appreciate you being here with us tonight.
Absolutely.
I wanted to come back. I was hoping that Gus Breton would call in here and join this conversation. He said about 15 minutes ago that if I'd give him 15 minutes, he would call in. So I'm hoping he's going to call in, because I'd like to have some more conversation about the courts and about the judges. Been learning some things and am able to witness that too. Kate just wrote a note, Red, if you're still with us, to say hello. She's now with us. She wasn't here during the technical difficulty time. Otherwise, she'd have probably gotten it straightened out a lot faster than I did. But she's here with us now, Red, so if you want to say hello
to Kate. That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm going to stay with you here for a bit yet.
Well, you know,
okay,
Red,
great.
I study their books, and reading the Federal Rules of Evidence, I have discovered that within the first 10 pages that the federal judges are only obligated to give the appearance or act like they're giving you fairness and justice. And beyond that, they're free to do with you as they please and exercise their judicial prerogatives or their discretion. Sometimes they use prosecutorial discretion to abuse, plunder, rob, rape, steal, and basically run a criminal racketeering operation under the guise of law.
They're a criminal syndicate.
That's Title 18, United States Code 1961, specifically, RICO tort fraud, a criminal enterprise. The fact the bar, as you well know, I know, Red, is absolutely a monopolistic organization, and it is covered by the Smith Act, which tells you that it's a seditious conspiracy to undermine and to overtake the government of the Republic of America, the Graham-Lanham Act, and the Taft-Hartley Act. And it's totally a criminal, cabalistic, monopolistic organization that has seized control of the legal system in this country. In fact, there is a bar qualification to sit on the Supreme Court. course, most people on this call likely understand the Supreme Court is a de facto Supreme Court and not a lawful de jure Supreme Court, and they're mere political activist judges pretending to operate by law, and they really have, they're, like you say, they're making their own judicial rulings and interpretations to codify or change judge-made law for the laws that were provided for by the founders in the Constitution. I apologize for my terrorist chupacabra chihuahua in the background. But these legal schemes they operate in, they're trying to accuse you of being a resident and claim they have jurisdiction when they...
Can anybody hear me?
I can hear you right now.
It seemed to go dead on me for a bit. So, Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. I was not hearing anything for a few seconds, so I'm sorry to interrupt you if I did so.
Oh, well, it's not a problem at all. I'm glad to have you back if you were gone, and hopefully my terrorist dogs here weren't distracting for too many on the call. But whatever you start saying. Oh, well, good. I guess that was a blessing. I did send an email and requesting you put me in contact with that Mr. Beckman. What a powerful soul that is, and he's obviously walking in the light with the Creator, and or he would have been in jail by now, or maybe has.
You know, I'll
what?
Tell you,
I believe. Go ahead, Red.
Yeah, I'll tell you. They have shied away from me ever since I sued that federal judge in '93, and that case was docketed. And of course, it was docketed, and they have not heard it. Those nine lawyers on the Supreme Court. They don't know what to do with it. And of course, I'm going to be filing another action here in another month or so, and it'll be back in Montana. And it'll be part of it on account of this estate of my brother. But I'm going after the Department of Revenue for the state of Montana and the IRS all in one action. And I don't anticipate any amount of problem from the federal judges because they know now that they don't want to get on the other end of a lawsuit with me, I don't think.
Well, that's pretty powerful ammunition that you're packing there, and I respect you and applaud your diligence and your knowledge of law that you use to hold these criminals accountable for their wrongs. Of course, pocket vetoing the case is one of those tactics they use.
Yeah, well, you see, the Supreme Court, they always thought they were the Supreme Court. And when I brought up the seventh article of the Bill of Rights in that case from '93, I think that was the first time, probably many years, that the court has been had to recognize the fact that the Seventh Amendment common law jury is the highest court in our land. That the Supreme Court there in Washington, D.C., sure, we need them there to settle disputes between the states, perhaps. And give us a view, give us a digest of what they think and what they see. And, of course, like that comment that I read from the district court judge in North Carolina, my goodness, you know, there it is right there in plain language. They think that a long course of history. And they're talking about the history that the judges, have written, and that they can change the Constitution. Now, I mean, that really should be a confession, I think, because, you know, they've been trying to change that Constitution forever, and here they are, the servants, and they have sworn to uphold that Constitution.
You hit across another one of those words there, Red. History.
Yeah.
His story. Whose story?
Yeah.
That's the critical question that needs to be asked.
Yeah. Yeah.
I tell you, these guys, they've had their way with us so long because the people were asleep at the wheel by design, by being distracted by sex, drug, rock and roll, and soliciting power, and chasing rainbows, that it's lucky that we woke up. But I have to agree with you and Todd, this is a fascinating, exciting time to be alive, because each and every one of us alive here on this call and the others that are waking up around the world are here towards the end of their great awakening, and this is a fascinating and exciting thing to see going on around the world, that the Creator is coming back, and we know the end of the story, that we're going to prevail. There could be some contentions, controversies, and disputes along the way, but with the Creator, that's who watches over me. I know He watches over you, Red, and I'm pretty sure everybody on this call, and that's why we go forth with the cloak of law of the Creator to protect us and put on the armor of God when we go to battle these demons. And He provides. He'll guide the words that come out of your mouth. He'll give you the direct you to the law that you need to know to elucidate and to pronounce in the courtroom to put these demons at bay. And it's just marvelous to see the way He works and to be an instrument of His work and to work for Him, to please Him in the fashion that He would have us to do, can be no higher calling or reward or duty that one can take on.
Yes, the children of Israel, they're out there wandering around and don't have a clue who they are. But I think we are seeing some things happen in that area where the children of Israel, I have a piece of property I bought here in Washington State, and the owner was a fellow by the name of Isaacson. And I've got a neighbor that just moved in like a quarter of a mile and built a new home on the other side of me here, and his name is Jacobson. Now, those people don't know, you know, they don't know where that name came from.
Son of Isaac and son of Jacob.
they're learning. I mean, it's coming. And, God, He divorced the children of Israel back there in Isaiah's day. But He said, you know, in the prophets, He said, I'm going to bring them back. And we are going to see that happening. Of course, I'm 85 years old, and I may have to look at it from the other side, but I'm going to be watching it, I'll tell you.
Well, you know, if you bought that property up there in Washington, that kind of brings to the conversation, the people really have got to retake their right to lands, to be stewards of His lands, and to honor the duty to be responsible stewards and to accept the patents that are connected to the land, because that authority supersedes the land, the interest of the state, and places the properties jurisdictionally without the taxing schemes of the corporate state. And it's the highest form of ownership of lands that exist in America. And it comes from treaty law, the power of Congress at the hand and seal of the president, and is administered by the Bureau of Land Management, but they don't own the land. They merely hold it in trust, as Todd was talking about, for the benefit and interest of we the people, and they never had any lawful right, title, or interest or authority to sell those lands or to cede them away to foreign interests to satisfy the cost of the federal government or to satisfy any ownership interest of foreign bankers over the lands of the people in this country who have been securitized and monetized and placed in bondage, debt, and slavery by these corporate banksters and the criminals within the government.
I like to remind people that the Roman Empire was, it was a monster and very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But the Roman Empire, the government, is on the junk heap of history. The USSR, the United Soviet Socialist Republics of Russia, they were tyrants, they were outlaws, they murdered millions of people. But they lasted less than 75 years. They were dissolved overnight, and they're gone. Now, when the Roman Empire went down, all of the land mass and the people were still there, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
When the USSR went down, the land mass that the Russian government claimed as their own and wasn't supposed to be any private property or anything else, the land is still there and the people are still on the land. I am convinced, and I may be wrong, but I don't think so. I think that one of these days, the federal god in Washington, D.C., that small g god, Satan told Eve in the Garden of Eden, ye shall be as gods. And, boy, we've had some people trying to be as gods, but one of these days, that government is going to go down because they have been in outright clear violation of the first and second commandments of God's basic law. And they are not going to survive, and when they're gone, the BLM is going to be gone. Their claim will have been proven to be false. And it's going to be the people on the land that make the difference. And they will be here. That federal Washington, D.C. God is going to go. It cannot survive this, trying to be the God of for the American people. And it just isn't going to work. It isn't going to last. And we're getting close, I think, to that point happening. And so we'll still be here. The land will still belong to we the people. And our Heavenly Father is going to sit on his throne and smile because he will have enforced his law. And so with that, I'm going to sign off here for tonight. But it's been good to have you, the guests here, and the difficulty to start with. That's kind of is something that's happened very regular here because I think there's people out there that don't want us talking like this so that people can hear this kind of message. But the good Lord, he wants this message to go out, and we're going to do everything we can to make it go out. So with that, I'll say so long for now. Take care,
blessings,
everybody.
Blessings to you, Brother Red. Travel safely.
Good night, Red.
You know, you said something
earlier.
Well, I
want to come back. Say what?
I was saying that you said something earlier that complements precisely what Red just said and punctuates it. The truth is determined to be treason in the empire of lies.
No doubt. I want to come back to this topic of courts and judges because, you know, I was right where you are, really. In our earlier conversation, Chris, about, you know, that we really don't have any legitimate courts anymore. Well, I guess that turns out not to exactly be the truth. And I was hoping that Gus Breton would call in. He was tied up on another call. But I'm hoping he'll still get in here. He's been, as I told you, studying common law. And one of the ways he's been doing that has been actually developing a personal rapport and relationship with Carl Lentz, and he and those two have gotten to be pretty good friends. But Lentz has a different approach, and I believe that his approach will make all of us more effective. He will admit that the courts have been commandeered, if you will. I think he would admit certainly that they have been occupied. By a bunch of legal fictions. But the courts are still there. All of the courts of record are capable of functioning as a common law court. And it's really up to a man or a woman to bring the law before that court. One of the mistakes we make is that we appear in a court. By being in the court, we in fact are acknowledging that jurisdiction. But a common law means would be a man walking in and appearing at and setting his court and presenting his claim and acting and conducting himself as a man with all of the full unalienable rights of a man, and not falling into the entrapment of all of these legal fictions. And by doing so, he does it in a respectful way. He doesn't go in there and insult the court. As a matter of fact, he's found that when he conducts himself as a man and brings the law before the court, the if you want to call them that, these magistrates, really these administrative people, actually respect what he does and treats him with that respect in most cases. And, I mean, occasionally you run across one that's just an idiot. But when they know the law and they understand it, and many of them do, I mean, I was beginning to think that they were just, you know, really not understanding and not having clarity and kind of making up things according to the Bar Association civil procedures and criminal procedures and stuff that's been put into place since the Second World War and et cetera, et cetera. You can get into that conversation. Don't need to really go down that path. But the point is that I thought they were all dumbed down, following stuff and just simply not really knowing the common law. Well, the fact of the matter is a lot of these judges actually do understand the common law. And when a man walks in there and refuses to be entrapped in their as a legal fiction and be trapped into their jurisdiction and doesn't allow them to pull their fun and games on them, these guys actually know what it's about and conduct themselves accordingly. And it's a very interesting concept, because the way that Lentz teaches it, he knows that the average person probably could study for years and not get to understand how not to be drawn into their game. And so he advises people to write a very simple brief and present their remedy in their brief, and try not to say any more than they absolutely have to say once they walk or come in the presence at that court. If you get into a debate with them, of course you want to argue, but politely. In other words, you want to express your wishes. You want to express what you require. You want to object to anything that they say that you is not in accordance with your wishes, but you do not want to fall into their traps, which means you need to say as little as possible other than objecting and saying, I've put my claim in my case, it's in my brief, that's what I'm here to present or to move, and if they try to do or say something that you disagree with, you want to enter your objection to that into the record, and you don't necessarily want to get into a big discussion with them. But you want to act respectfully, and you do not want to go in there and put them in a discomfortable or defensive position because of your attitude. And what he's finding by going that way, he's able to bring the law before it. He's able to set it as a common law court. He's able to put the prosecutors and these judges into their place. And he's able to get his remedies moved so that they actually are entered as an order. He's been able to return people's children, which they don't call them children, by the way. He calls them property, because children is another one of those legal fictions that puts them under the jurisdiction of that court or the state. So he refers to children as property and requires the restoration or the return of that property to a man, and it has been extremely effective.
I would certainly be interested in seeing some of the paperwork or communications. I haven't followed Mr. Lentz, but I'm certainly curious about what he's doing, because I'm fighting much of the criminality within the family courts that use the mask or disguise of secrecy to cover up the criminality that occurs in their day and day as their stock and trade. Did you happen to see the, we'll call it a verbal combat between the public defender and the judge in Broward County, Florida, that's making the rounds the last couple of days, where they went out into the hall for fisticuffs?
I did not.
Oh, this is a monster. I've got it in my email. I'll certainly send it to you. But this prosecutor was defending a fellow before the court. Of course, they normally represent in the interest of the court. They're pretender defenders. But this one was actually trying to defend his client, and the judge was trying to force this public defender to force his client to give up his right to a speedy trial. You know, if they've exceeded the time bar on the speedy trial, then that's a regulation violation, and you can motion to have the whole thing thrown out based upon that alone. And this fellow was arguing, and he wasn't going to do that, and he was supposed to, he had a right to represent his client before the court, and yada yada. He said, well, I'll have you know, I'll just beat it out of you if I have to. You want to go out? He said, well, you want to go out in the hall? And so he said, well, let's go out in the hall. So they headed out in the hall, and you'd hear this, at least it gave the impression they were fighting in the hall. The defender claimed that he grabbed him by the collar and struck him. Well, I doubt that they have cameras there, because that's probably either in camera, which means in secret in the judge's chambers, or non-videoed area, because it's presumed to be safe. And whether there was actually video evidence of it, I can't tell you yet. But apparently there was actually striking, and that judge the next day was removed from the bench, as he properly should have been. But you mentioned a word early on in this part of the conversation. You said magistrate. Well, the etymology of that word magistrate is to stratify the nature of magi, or magic man, magic god man. And so these words all have meanings within them that most people do not have the diligence, awareness, or ability to comprehend what's really encrypted in these words they use, but they all have special other meanings than what we perceive normally. And so I would just counsel you, I don't have a dramatic exception with anything that you suggested Mr. Lentz did. In fact, further, I would suggest that it's better never to appear in court, but to promptly respond within 72 hours, in the law of threes, with competent motions, pleadings, petitions, and averances to their allegations. That means that you basically object to their allegation and found your objection on fact, law, and evidence to set aside or void or aver their insinuations to what you did, perhaps refuse for cause without acceptance or without dishonor. And that by, like you say, particularly using your phraseology, word terms, law, and citations to control the judges and to hold them into the Article III General Justice Court's jurisdiction that is provided within the Seventh Amendment and the Judiciary Act of 1789 and the small d, small c district courts of the U.S., by proper confident motions, pleadings, and petitions using correct verbiage, words, phrases, and words of law to control the courts and to use the choice of law to choose the form of law that you desire to have your case and matter heard under. Recently, Rod Class, who's another common law private attorney general, somewhat like myself, had come across the concept of doing an entry of appearance on the court for even for in natura pro pers, sui juris, or pro se individuals. The pro se is generally a red flag to the judges that they have some individual that's coming for them that's going to give them problems, and they'll probably put your case at the last and clear the courtroom so they can obstruct justice and deny a new process and deny you the opportunity of a public hearing. But they generally want to rush to making a plea, and when you look up that word plead in Black's Law, that thing's got 5 or 6 pages of meaning. It's a lot more insidious. So does sentence. These words have multiple different layers of meanings that could mean any number of things. In fact, if you read Title 18, United States Code Section 1001, it's a very broadly written statute with particularly insidious aspects that can be used to convert anything that you say, think, blink, or contemplate to being a violation of lying to a federal agent. Of course, they do it all the time, but it's okay for them because they're special. They have titles of nobility, which are precluded in Article 1, Section 9 and 10 of the Constitution, still in spite of the eradication and attempt to obliterate the original 13th Title of Nobility Act. Propounding on what Red said, not only is the 16th unlawful, but the 14th, the 13th, and the 15th, which were the Reconstruction of Government Acts. In fact, I'm on this call tonight in lieu of being on another call where they had L.B. Bork, who wrote the book The Red Amendment, which is a treatise on the 14th Amendment and the unlawful nature of it because it was never lawfully passed except at the points of guns of agents of the North being sent in the House and to the South after the cessation of hostilities and after the states that had originally attempted to secede and had been at war had been returned to their lawful standing and position as one of the Union of States United by the Constitution. And so post-cessation of hostilities, after the war was over, they sent the carpetbaggers and the de facto officers of the Northern government to the South to take over lawfully elected officios who were sitting in their lawfully elected jurisdictional seats and at the points of guns removed them from their seats so they could force through the Reformation of Government Acts, which were not lawful, that were never properly put into effect whatsoever, and have been declared to be unlawful and illegal in cases like Dyett, D-Y-E-T-T-T, D-Y-E-T-T, versus Turner. It was a Utah case, and I think 1866 or 67, post the Civil War. And found it to be null, void, and ab initio. Different ways to pronounce it, but that's one. But there were many cases, Georgia, maybe South Carolina, New Jersey, also found it to be unlawful. In fact, if people are curious about that aspect, on the republicbroadcastingnetwork.org, Monday through Friday at 8 o'clock in the morning Pacific time, adjust for your local time zone deviation from that, there's a program called Resurrect the Republic, Thomas Lacovara and Bruce Ray Riggs, and their main point of their show is to try to get the 14th Amendment, which created a new class of small c federal subject slave citizen, subject to the power of Congress, enjoying mere privileges in lieu of their creator-provided natural rights that we enjoy as our humanity. And whatever Congress gives, Congress can take away. And many people thought that we had to earn the benefits of Social Security, but we find that there are privileges that are granted by the power of Congress and the creation of these agencies outside the constitutional limitations of the three branches of government. And so, therefore, they become the headless fourth branches of government. And these agency actors who are without the powers of the Constitution, the BLM, the FBI, the CIA, the NSA, the Forest Service, and the EPA, and the AMA, and these are all corporate constructions, and they have no force or effect at law over the people who are the American people, but only amongst the 14th Amendment U.S. subject slave citizens that were created under that construct of tyranny and slavery, which brought about the English law feudal system as it was going out in Europe. And so it's really important that we do our due diligence study and investigate and find out the truth of the matter of law. In fact, that the truth be known, the United States Code, sections 1 through 50, titles 1 through 50, were never properly passed into substantive positive law. They were merely budgeted for the printing of the code under what was termed the Little Bill in 1925, named for Colonel Edwin C. Little, former state representative or congressman from Kansas. And it was said in that particular bill that they had worked for over 30 years prior to that to put this bill into effect, and that it effectively reformed the law and put in a whole new form of foreign law, a federal law, to rule this land. But it was never lawfully accepted by both houses and signed by the president to properly move it into positive substantive law as required by the statutes at large of the United States and the actual law of the land. So these are really, really interesting things that we have to do these things, and oh my goodness. That's
what I want to check on. I want to check on Doug. I was having a lot of trouble with my studio and wasn't responding to me. We've got about 8 minutes left. Doug, you have an open mic on your 707 phone. Now, I believe, are you there? Doug? I'm going to try to unmute him on the 406 number again. That's not the right one. It should have been, wait, that's 406. It's got a hand. Oh, that was Kate. I don't need to go there. Try on the 434 number again.
It's probably a perfect time.
Yeah. Are you
there?
Are you with us, Doug?
Jim Cook. Doug was supposed to have come in with me, but he was talking to you earlier. I don't know what happened.
This is Jim Cook with Crusade Radio, everybody. I've got him on the line at 707. But he's not responding, so
I just wanted
to make sure that Doug was able to get in any comments that he had. I know he's going to be getting ready to head out for his high school reunion here in a couple of days, and we're supposed to have breakfast together tomorrow morning, but I just wanted to give him a chance to make any final comments or ask any final questions that he had. Jim, did you have any questions?
Pretty much I was listening to what Chris was saying. He's absolutely correct. The laws that we have on the books were never meant to be lawful for Americans. As a matter of fact, they aren't. And as we know, if you challenge the courts and their jurisdiction, then they have to back down. And it's gotten to a point where I think Chris is also right about the fact that it's a point of no return, and they're going to force their jurisdiction onto us. So we're not in good times, but I can only agree with what Chris has put forth.
Wow. That's pretty special.
Are you not accustomed to Jim agreeing with you, Chris?
Well, not necessarily Jim, but, you know, there are many times that when you're talking about these precepts that some people find them controversial. They suffer so much deceit from the programming from the Central Soviet-styled socialist education system. Oh, and incidentally, they have Arne Duncan as the education czar, former NAMBLA member, card-carrying, North American Man-Boy Love Association, so it shouldn't be surprising that we have all these homosexual instruction techniques coming out and deviancy being perpetuated through the school system to destroy the moral fiber and the ethics and families of America.
Well, for your information, Chris, we've had L.B. Bork on Walls in Our Minds before. I do have the Red Amendment in my possession, and I've got a number of friends who have followed his system for being removed as a U.S. citizen, which most people don't really understand what that term means at all. But
well,
tend to disappear. Go ahead.
Well, Roger Sales has a show weekly, weekdays. It comes on at 2 o'clock our time. He's the writer of From Sovereign to Serf, Government by the Treachery and Trickery of Words. And in the back of his book, he has a 5-page affidavit of status that one would properly record or file to the United States Secretary of State, who is the determiner of political statuses, and there are at least two. And he is an advocate of the U.S. National, which he says is analogous to the non-resident alien, non-domestic, American state national citizen. Yes, an American national. In fact, I had suggested that you might pre-qualify that U.S. national would be an American national as opposed to a U.S. national, because I thought that was more lawfully correct and accurate. But they do give you two blocks to check on the immigration naturalization form, the passport form.
Well,
I apologize.
Let's go there. Let's go there for just a minute. We got about 3 minutes. I don't have a lot of time to cover this, but basically, an American national is what we were all born as until we filed a 1040. The first time, which basically was an agreement to be a U.S. citizen, which basically made us subject to that corporate entity that possesses that 10 square miles, and obviously they possess a lot more than that now because of abdication. We've abdicated and allowed them to operate outside of their constitutional or lawful jurisdiction, so that now what is deemed legal is no longer the same thing as what's lawful. But when you said non-resident alien, well, even if you're a U.S. citizen, that only makes you a resident alien. You're still alien to that corporation. You're still alien to that corporation, which is collecting your taxes. U.S. citizen simply means that you're subject to that their jurisdiction. So
I would
this whole
urge the listeners, they might want to visit a YouTube put on by Roger Sales at www.ausapassportfored.com. There, it's about a 27 minute video. And, right.
Chris, if you're still listening, I think you might have muted yourself there because of the dogs. We've got about 60 seconds left, Chris, and I'd like for you to make any final comment and let the listeners know if you have a website or books or anything like that that you'd like to send them to.
Hang on a second.
I'd just like to thank listeners for being here.
Sorry about that. I had to check to see if I was muted. I wasn't. No, I do not have a website. If someone wishes to contact me, they can contact me through you. In fact, I sent you an email requesting you send my contact information to Red. But, you know, if somebody needs special assistance and they want to know how to contact me, you're certainly free to share my contact information. I'll try to do what I can to point in the right direction. Say I'm not selling anything. I don't ask for anything. I'm just trying to do the service I'm supposed to do to the Creator by assisting His children or His spirits to find relief and to try to protect them, to defend them. And, you know, a lot of us are not sophisticated and knowledgeable.
We're out of time. Thank you very much for coming tonight, and thanks for hanging in there so long with all of our technical difficulties at the beginning of the show.
Thanks
God
for blessing
bless
me
you
and
this
me
week,
come.
My man.
I
well,
am
you're
blessed.
Welcome.
Thank you
you're,
very much.
You're welcome back here anytime.
All right.
Good night, Jim. Good night, Doug. Good night, Kate. Good night, Red. Good night, all of our listeners. See you next week on Walls in Our Minds.
Terry.
Bye-bye.